Well, I personally would not select these readings for a baptism or for a Midsummer Sunday, but here goes, folks. It's what we've been given, and maybe we need to deal with it. She is divine wisdom. She watches over all people and all things in heaven and earth. A quote from Hildegard Bingen. Today's reading, Ecclesiastes, speaks of wisdom. In Hebrew, the word is chokmah, and in Greek, it is sophia, and both words are feminine. Wisdom literature is a category of scripture that has many facets. One is how to live an honorable life. I picked the photo on the cover of the bulletin because I believe the sculptor would resonate with the wisdom tradition. This amazing statue is right in the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York City. Have any of you seen it? I mean, it's a pretty amazing statue. The figure is bold. She is naked, and she is serene. And if you look at it, she is warding off the planes that came into New York City on 9/11. Her hands are in the Oran's position, which is the position of prayer. And she's actually, if you see the statue, receiving the stigmata at the moment that the plane hits. She is absorbing as much pain as she possibly can. Yet she remains serene, invulnerable, hands open. And she did not succeed in blocking all the pain. You know, wisdom can do all that she can, and the rest is up to us, folks. And the thing that hits me about the statue is there is a large reliquary with pieces of clothing that were found in the rubble after the strike. So there are pieces of clothing of people who have died in the attack. And what caught my breath was I saw a piece of Victoria's Secret underwear. Someone, a young woman, woke that morning full of hope. And somehow, this statue is saying that there are things in our lives that we give over to a power and a force that we simply cannot control. Yet, that is not the summation of our lives. The statue is one of great dignity. It is not the summation. Today's gospel is about one family and who owns the food, the wealth, and the land, and what are the moral consequences of greed, vanity of vanities. Luke's Jesus is not afraid of discussing difficult issues, which are part of our very humanness. Nor is he afraid of evaluating a man who has little empathy or respect for his fellow humans. Jesus calls the man, the main character in the gospel story, a fool. Someone who is interested in acquiring more and more without any sense of social responsibility. Last Sunday, the gospel included the Our Father, a prayer that teaches us that things are not for the individual alone. Jesus uses the word us when asking for food. Give us this day. Yet the man in this morning's story owns most of the food in the town, but he only uses the word I. And he states how he will enjoy himself, not the community. In this environment, in this story, Jesus has him as a landowner. And this is a small minority of people in Jesus' world. If there is a famine, that particular person is responsible for the whole. Yet, if he is unethical, he can ask an exorbitant price for his grain. He could strike a deal with someone to gain more land and more power over his neighbors. So, what about the structure of the barn that Jesus mentions? Both food and winter supplies are stored in the barn, and every town has one of these barns and relies on its own supplies for the winter. And in good years, wheat is stored for a bad year. The landowner is responsible for the good of the whole. The owner of the barn builds an extension when there is a good year and abundant wealth is accumulated. Wealth is chiefly products: wheat, barley, beans, cereals, and that is how power is accumulated. And a man who has many barns is living in luxury. In ancient Mediterranean society, whoever gained more than was considered necessary for that individual was considered, the word is, and it is in the history, a thief. A thief. That's a pretty strong word. And so what the story is saying is, how could one consider retiring in wealth when the goods are not shared within the community? To gather wealth for the individual is not relying on God's abundance. This would make, according to Jesus, one a fool. And Jesus is asked to become an arbitrator in a family feud over the land, and he's wise enough to stay out of that argument. Rather, he looks on the whole scene and decides, perhaps, that each brother will not be looking out for the community, the poor, the peasants. The people who work the land are not gaining anything from this pair of brothers. And so Jesus sets up a sort of a moral controversy. And the man with all the wealth is playing a no-win game, since he does not know that joy, relationships, and human worth do not come from hoarding, but rather by sharing. I grew up in a working class family that never talked openly about money. But I did know that I lived in a country where people were valued by what they owned. I did know I had to work in the summers to get through school. I did know that I had to help. I did learn another thing when I was a professional, very young teacher, and a student threw a pencil at my feet, and he said, "Pick it up." And I did not, and I said, "You threw it, you pick it up." And he said, "My servants pick up my things." And I said, "Pick up your pencil." And he said, "My parents pay your wages. Pick it up." And I thought, oh, this is going nowhere. You know? And another girl in the class went over and swooped it up. But what's it saying? Jesus is asking us to look at our possessions and the power that they hold over others. And we also hold that power over ourselves. This was poisoning for that little boy. Totally poison. Money is just money. It helps us create community, to do outreach, and to become healthy human beings. We don't live in a barter system. We spend money to maintain our sustenance and that of others. Sometimes we spend it to show love or just for pure joy. Money is simply paper. Unless we give it an identity for fostering a balanced life and a format for creating healthy communities of service and friendship, and for creating nations where food, which is a possession, is not used to keep others in subservience. There are many ways of looking at money and what it can buy. One model is the scarcity model. I don't have enough. I need to protect myself. What if this happens? What if that happens? Should I buy more insurance? Will I be able to make it? Can I care for my family? Will I lose my barn? At times, we want to crawl into our barn when things become unknown or iffy. But folks, that is a response made in fear. The other model is a model of abundance, feeling blessed in what we have, being willing to share, knowing that we will provide for one another, that we trust that if I put in my barn doors all the abundance, I can open those doors for others. And if I do this, perhaps my neighbor will do it and it will continue on. That is thankfulness. We've all had moments in our lives when we can open ourselves and our arms to the abundance that is all around us. And often those moments are when we realize how fleeting and precious is each moment of life. And we have a choice on how we live our lives. We have a choice as a nation in how we will spend or store our plenty, especially if there is a famine in the world. The theologian and storyteller Megan McKenna says to not be surprised when we die and are asked by St. Peter, "What country is on your passport? Did you share your wealth? Did you share your bread?" At this moment, the world is in a very precarious state. At this very moment, while we are celebrating Eucharist, sharing the bread and wine, children are starving over a war that they did not start. Do we watch them starve when the world has a barn full of wheat? When it is all over, do we say, "Never again"? And we make individual and national choices. A friend taught me to look at the pie chart that comes with my credit card statement at the end of the year. Maybe you have one of those on yours. So much spent on medical, housing, food, car, travel, entertainment, charity. And the first time that I did this exercise, I was surprised at the size of certain parts of the pie. And that is when I decided to make another pie chart of the things and the places that I loved. How much would I donate to various friends in need, political parties, national disasters, and my spiritual homes? When I did this, the pie chart shifted dramatically. And when we set up a national budget, the pie chart should reflect our national values. And an affluent nation surely has responsibility to share its resources, to open its barn doors, to share its wheat. If we knew that our life was to end in a month, what would we do to make certain that our earth would say thank you at our passing? The teachings of Jesus state the only way to achieve happiness is that each time we encounter anyone in our daily lives, anyone beyond our boundaries, we care for the needs of those people, and we care for the earth, and of course, we also care for ourselves. A story. Two families asked their village rabbi to settle a dispute about the ownership of their land. The rabbi listened to the members of the family recount how they inherited the land from their ancestors and how it had been in the family for so many generations. They produced documents and maps to prove their claim. Then the rabbi listened to the other family describe how they had lived on the land for many years, working on it and harvesting it. They claimed that they knew the land intimately. They had no papers to prove their claim. Only their calloused hands, their sore backs, and the harvest they had reaped from the land. After presenting their cases, the family said, "Decide, Rabbi, who owns the land?" "What would you say?" Are you clear? I am so glad that you know what you would say. Yes. Do you have a clear answer? This is what we're doing worldwide right now, folks. And this is what the rabbi said. He said nothing. He knelt on the land, put his ear to the ground. He listened for some time. He then stood up and said to the families, I listened to both of you, but I had to listen to the land. It's the center of this dialogue and this dispute, and the land has spoken. The land told me this. Neither of you owns the land you stand on. It is the land that owns you. It's the land that owns us. This story is in our moment now. It is happening now. And we as Christians, and I think by teaching our young people as they choose baptism, that we take courageous stances now and again, and we stand for those who cannot stand for themselves. When nations vie for the same piece of land and the world community watches, and one nation starves another nation to secure more land, what are the moral consequences for the whole world? What is the moral consequence for everyone in this room? What is the moral consequence for our children? And I know nothing is simple. But the gospel calls us all fools if we watch children die from starvation because they do not have access to the barn. The gospel challenges us to look at what we consider wealth. Perhaps this is the week we turn to Lady Wisdom and ask her to help us discern our true wealth, its moral consequences, so that we glimpse our true joy, compassion, and common humanity. She is divine wisdom. And we, by our own baptisms, folks, are part of that divine wisdom. She is divine wisdom. She watches over all things, all persons in heaven and on earth. Amen.